This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Brock Rahm.
Yeah, what's a command key?
Karina Anglada.
Really? I didn't realize it.
And Darius Thomas.
We're all creatives.
We are sitting down with an incredible creative leader who has a knack for turning bold ideas into actionable success. Shauna Howell is BYU Athletics Director of Creative Design, and she shares some of the most impactful advice you can use to lead with innovation, take creative risks, and turn your visions into a reality. If you're looking for guidance on how to think outside the box and turn all of your ideas into beautiful pieces of art that stands out, this episode is for you. Shauna is amazing and has so many incredible insights, and we are thrilled for y'all to take a listen.
Want to head over to Time.is, gang?
I'm there.
Do y'all want to do 43? That was a full like 3 seconds ahead of you guys.
Oh.
Do you have an interest in adding motion design to your skill set, but just aren't sure where to start?
Let's go!
Welcome to Baller Effects, your source for sports content and motion tutorials. From tips and tricks to long-form tutorials and project deep dives, there's a lot to take in. There's even a free mini-course playlist called How to Animate Sports for Social. This playlist will take you step-by-step through the process of creating a 5-second animated player stat graphic. For your sport-specific motion training, visit Baller Effects on YouTube and get started today.
We are so excited to have our special guest, Shauna Howell from BYU Athletics today. We are thrilled for this conversation. We've seen your work and you are just amazing. And we just got intel that you are in your 10th year with BYU. So welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much. It's so fun to be here.
All right, let's dive into the questions. So you just mentioned it, right? 10 years at BYU. Tell us a little bit about your journey, how you got started, and what your role is today.
Okay. It was a little circuitous. I started as an illustration major in college. No interest in being a graphic designer. Actively had teachers tell me I was really bad at graphic design. Was always very scared of doing anything that had to do with typography, or I just avoided it at all costs because I believed I was so bad at it. Out of college, I kind of thought about like freelancing, doing children's book illustration, but I always really liked the idea of a steady paycheck. So I actually jumped into video games. I did like character design and texture work.
Cool.
That kind of thing. Ended up at Disney doing that sort of stuff for them, which was awesome. And then got pregnant, was going to have a baby, and babies do not love those 80-hour work weeks. So,
really? I didn't realize it.
They're not big fans. They don't get that. So I actually just quit. I stayed home with her until she went to like first or second grade. And I just decided I am not cut out for like just the stay at home mom with a kid who's in school thing. I got really bored and wanted to do something. And I just on a fluke looked at job posting at BYU. And there was like a 3/4 time sports designer position that scared the pants off me because, again, I didn't know how to do graphic design. But I decided to just kind of take a leap and try it and see how bad I really was. And the truth was really pretty bad.
Awful. Yeah, just totally awful.
No, I'm quite serious. Like, I had never used a Mac. I had never, like, I remember getting to work the first day and I couldn't find the button to turn it on. It was, like, hidden back there.
I know, like, triggered.
Not a great start.
So were you used to doing everything like hand drawn then, or some, or when you were at Disney, was a lot of it more just like you drawing?
No, not like it was all digital. I was doing texture work and stuff in Photoshop, taking the 3D models, like making them look like real characters, and doing a little character design as well, but it was definitely all digital, but it was a lot of tactile stuff that I think like comes out in what I do now a little bit. But yeah, just kind of jumped into design after that and figured it out on the fly. But I did not know what I was doing. It was scary.
Yeah, you said you scared the pants off you. I'm so curious, like, what was your motivating factor then? Or was the fear driving you?
The motivating factor, I mean, I wanted to get a job, and it was hard to find a job that was like during my daughter's school hours and like trying to figure out how to make that work. And in some sort of a visual field, I'm not like in New York or LA.
Right.
I love BYU. It was part of my undergraduate. I've grown up around here. So I just thought, you know, I'm not going to get a chance to even be in a visual field with the things that I need in that job. And so I should give this a try, and just, you know, decided to be brave and test out if I was really terrible at all the things I believed I was terrible at.
I love that mentality for so many reasons, because I think for a lot of us creatives, like, we are inherently, we all started from somewhere, right? Like you mentioned, you didn't know where the button was to turn it on. And Justin knows I was an intern for Illinois. I'll never forget, you know, working my first soccer game, and they're like, go turn on the camera. And I was terrified, like heart pounding out my chest, because I'm like, where's the button? What button to turn it on? There's so many buttons.
That's the worst feeling.
I'm curious, like, looking back at your younger self, like, and what advice do you have, if any, to give to her looking back at that time and space that you were in?
I mean, obviously, just don't hold on to those beliefs you made about yourself when you were first starting out, because that's not the person you continue to be. You keep changing. But we have this tendency to like just hold on to a belief like that and just never let it go. So definitely like let yourself kind of evolve and change and get past that. Because my professors were right that I wasn't a graphic designer right then, but to like not let yourself hold on to that forever. And also probably just like not being too wound up about being good, but more like let yourself kind of believe in the process of becoming good and kind of let that be the point, as opposed to just getting to this goal mark of like, I am good. Because once you get there, you stop improving. If you believe you get there, there is no getting there. You're always improving. But if you think every piece you do is awesome, then you're not getting better. You're just kind of hoping you're already there, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. I just wrote down what you said, like becoming good and focusing on that, because that's part of being a creative, the evolution. Yeah, I love that.
It's all process. It's not like a destination, for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about your style, because I think you have a very distinct style. You have a really nice use of texture in a lot of your work, almost to the point that like, I almost don't know how to put it into words, but your designs look high value, right? There's almost like a tangible quality to your designs with the texture. Yes. This looks like a high quality print, or this looks like it looks like I can reach out and touch it sometimes. And
like art almost.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's almost like this physical sense of value you have to things when I see your work. Where does that come from, and where do you draw your inspiration from, and how and where do you use texture and decide on that sort of stuff?
I mean, I think my background has a lot to do with kind of my preferences, and really all style is your own preferences that you're chasing. And so that people get wound up about style and trying to pick a style. And I think that just kind of evolves naturally based on what you like and what you continue to follow in your work. So if you look at my background, I think you can see those influences that I started like with traditional media. And I kind of really went heavy into texturing when I was working at Disney, and all those things that I was learning to love and like work with come out in my, work in sports. And I think all the things that made me feel like an imposter when I got this job, where I was like, oh, I'm a traditional illustrator and I don't know how to do design, and I like to do figure drawing, and all those things are kind of what I thought were weaknesses, or maybe what make my work stand out a little bit as opposed to being weaknesses. It's what has helped my work stand out. As far as like the texture stuff, I'm always just kind of feel like I'm chasing like a more analog feel. I'm always trying to like away from like, this feels like it was made on a computer.
Almost like analog film. That's almost kind of what the texture and grain feels like sometimes.
Yeah. If something I'm working on starts to look like a frame from like a Charlie Chaplin film, I'm like, yes, I love it. Which isn't everyone's jam at all. And that's why I say like style, it's something like probably we think a little bit too much about maybe, because that's just going to happen from doing what you like to do. And eventually that evolves. And especially as a graphic designer, like you don't want to chase that too much because you have to be a bit of a chameleon. I'm lucky on like BYU basketball, I've gotten a lot of free rein to do what I want, which is why you see much more of my style come out. But if I hop onto another sport or if I'm doing a freelance job, like that definitely has to be reined in and it becomes a lot more subtle.
On that same note, I'm on your Twitter account or X, whatever we're calling it these days. And for those listening in, definitely give Shauna a follow on all the socials. But you have a tweet pinned at the top of your profile saying, "I will never shut up about the importance of finding inspiration outside of the sports world." And there's, you know, beautiful image of these birds, and then this awesome design of the men's basketball team. What is your perspective on finding inspiration outside of sports, and where is your favorite place, if any, or places to find that inspiration that's not connected to sports?
Yeah, I'm pretty, like, I have a lot to say about that, because I feel like so much of the stuff we make in sports looks similar. And I feel like part of the reason is sheer volume. Like, you're putting out so much stuff. You can't just do some magical piece of art every time. When you're putting out 15 graphics a day, it sometimes just has to be like the formula that you know that works. But when you get the chance, it doesn't take much to stand out in this industry, because so many of us are just looking at each other's stuff, looking at other sports stuff. So the stuff you do is going to look like other people's sports stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you can just start, what you consume is what you create. If you are looking at nothing but sports stuff all the time, your stuff is going to look like that. So I really, really try and make a conscious effort to branch out from that and look at other things, other time periods, just because that's going to find its way into your work. And it just doesn't take that much to stand out in this field in particular, because I feel like it's a pretty young field. And again, the time constraints make it difficult to really be super creative on every piece. But honestly, my favorite place is Pinterest. And I know, like, I can also look up like a tuna salad recipe on Pinterest. So sometimes like people don't take it as seriously. Yeah. But Behance is great, and there's so much beautiful work on there. But as far as time frame, you're looking at very contemporary work all the time. I like that on Pinterest, I'm seeing a typography or like a handwritten calligraphy manual from the 1500s sometimes. Like, just really all over the place in terms of time periods. And the way that I like to work, that really goes along hand in hand with like the inspiration I like to find. But I do, like, on Pinterest specifically, try and make a point that I'm not pinning very much sports material. At the beginning of every season, I will make a board, and it's just a lot of stuff that I just like. It's not even stuff I consciously can figure out, like, this is going to fit into how I'm designing this season. It's really all over the place. There's very little sports. A lot of it is from the 50s or like the medieval times or whatever. And I really like the variety of that. And I feel like on some level, even if it's not conscious, it will make its way into your work. I also like, if you guys have ever looked at archive.org, it's just basically scans of every book ever made. And so there's a lot of like handwritten typography. Sometimes I'll take, you know, direct, like I'll build a word from an old typography manual or something without like just putting in type, just because you get that tactile feel, you get some of that handmade quality that I really, really like. That doesn't work for every project or for every person, but that's kind of where I'm usually looking for stuff.
I like how you said what you consume is what you create.
Definitely.
And sometimes it's not just like what we see on Twitter or Instagram or Pinterest or any of these. Outside of the digital space, where are you finding other inspiration? Like, BYU is in a geographical area where you could find some inspiration, right? So are you
for sure
kind of leaning into some of that as well?
We're outdoors a lot, my family and I. Texturally, I find a lot of inspiration just, you know, being out in nature and stuff. I also really like environmental stuff in terms of buildings and architecture and detailing that way, I think is fun to bring in to my work. It's definitely takes things to another level if you can find a way to find inspiration that's not even necessarily visual, like songs that you hear. All that creative stuff, I feel like, can work its way into your work if you are conscious about it and very deliberate about what you consume.
I want to touch on something that I realized we have not really discussed that much on the pod, but you brought it up, and that's parenting. And, you know, part of your decision to move to BYU was built on, you know, finding a schedule that works for you being a parent. How does being a parent, if at all, play into your work and your creativity? And do you find any inspiration from kiddos? And what is your general take on balancing, you know, life and work and parenting all at once?
It's tricky. And first of all, it's hilarious that I went into sports as a way to have a schedule that worked with my daughter.
Yeah, that's, we got to double click on that in a second.
People listening to this are like, wow, that's a dumb move. First of all, big shout out to BYU. They make it easier than probably any athletic department in the universe to make it work so you can have a family and you can have a life. And it's not that way for everyone. And it's something that makes me sad about our industry, that like, mm-hmm. you see a bunch of 25-year-olds that are single, because by the time they're 30 with a family, they have to leave the industry because they're working jobs that don't make it feasible. And you see it all the time, insanely mm-hmm. talented people that just, they love what they do, but they cannot make it work. And I hate that that's the choice they have to make. And I hope like, our industry is able to move more into making it feasible instead of just acting like, oh, you're just lucky to be in this industry and, you know, only employing young people that can do it. Right. BYU has been a great landing spot for me. And it isn't necessarily like that at a lot of places for a mom to make it work, or a dad, or someone who really just wants to have some time with their family. But BYU's been great, and I'm really lucky that way. And as far as like being a mom and how that inspires me, I love being able to show my daughter that she's 17 now. She's applying to colleges. She has always talked about like maybe wanting to be a mom, but she also doesn't want to give up all these cool dreams she has. And so I love that I'm able to like show her like, hey, you can like do that. Mm-hmm. And I spent so much time when she was young and had started going back to work feeling guilty and being like, oh no, she's going to feel abandoned. And she tells me all the time that she thinks it's awesome and thought it was great. And so I think just especially being in an industry where there's not a lot of women, and there's not a lot of women my age especially, I think it's just cool to be able to be someone who can make it work and show people that it can work, and hopefully like eventually get this industry to a place where it can work for more people.
Preach. This is, I'm, it's all resonating so much. And how cool, that your daughter, is she interested in creative at all?
Or? She wants to go into film, and she accepted to BYU. She just got accepted to UConn. We're waiting on a few more, making some decisions, but she's really excited. And, I'm excited for her. We'll see what she does.
Close to home or far away?
Well, BYU would be real close to home. Yeah, yeah. So we'll see if she chooses that route.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when I keep thinking about your texturing work and you bringing up that you worked at Disney and that's how you got into all of your texturing. I would love to hear more about that, but also I think you need to start making tutorials about how you work because I'd love to learn. It just feels so tactile, and it stands out outside of the blue and white, obviously, you know, when BYU colors come across. So how do you think about approaching your work when you are doing your research on Pinterest and applying it to a project? What is that process like? And are you doing any work to like scan things in order to leverage them in the digital world to be able to create your work?
It depends, obviously, on the project. If I have a project that I do have some time on, I will spend a fair amount of time on Pinterest. I will usually have a folder of failed designs. I'm really willing to like try something out. And I've learned, I wasn't like this when I started out. I would get like really nervous if it stopped working or if I wasn't able to make it something that I liked. I'll just start over and toss it in the like experiment folder. And that's, I think, kind of integral to how I work, at least, is just a willingness to like throw it out. Like, I have so much stuff that doesn't work, and it takes me a bit to get to something that does. Texturing wise, like, for me, that's the easier part of things, because that's what comes a little more naturally to me. I'm spending more time usually on composition or like typography and trying to make sure like I have those solid, and like the texturing part of it, that comes a little more naturally to me, and that like is just a more natural evolution of whatever I'm working on. So I'm spending more time trying to get those solid basics, because the texturing, I feel like, is a little more, you can make it work in a lot of different ways, you know? So, but yeah, tutorials, I'm not good at doing that sort of thing. Every once in a while, I'll put a little bit of something on Twitter, but I don't know how to like film what I'm working on or put it on YouTube. That's kind of out of my realm right now, but maybe someday.
Maybe that's something your daughter can help with if she wants to get into film.
Hey, I like where you're thinking, Darius.
I can put her in charge of everything. No doubt she would be better at it than I am.
Absolutely. Kids are amazing at all of the things.
Yeah, they are.
So I'm going to take us way, way, way back. Like, as a kid, like, I always like to think, like, sometimes we pick up things later in life. Like, as a kid, did you realize that you wanted to do anything in the creative space? Or was this something that you kind of fell into later in life?
Sure. I was the kid who liked to draw horses. That, like, in class, I was the girl who was always drawing. They thought of me as the artist. And, like, so in some vague way, like, I thought that would be neat. And also, probably, as I got a little bit older, probably not realistic. So into high school, like, I was in all the AP art classes, and I thought of myself as the art kid. But when I got to college, I tried to pick something more practical. But for sure, as a little kid, I was always drawing. I was always doing something creative that way. I just don't know that I thought realistically it was something I could actually do with my life.
And you said that you picked something practical. I think for a lot of us, in did you see design as a career option from high school to college? Or was that something that, I think when I was in school, I never would have thought that I could make a career out of what I did. That's why I went into computer science. But did you kind of have that same mindset?
Yeah, for sure. I don't even think I consciously thought about it. I think in high school, like toward the end of high school, I probably thought, this is a fun hobby that I'm kind of good at. But I probably, on some level, assumed I wasn't good enough. Or you hear those things like, you have to be so good to make it in art. And I don't know that I really thought about other options like design. When I got to college, I tried, I don't know, probably 3 or 4 different majors. And I remember, like, sophomore year, sitting down with like the catalog, like the big paper bound like catalog with every major in it.
Yep.
And going through and like crossing out everything I hated. And the thing that was left was illustration. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe that's a little bit of a sign. And so I went and talked to the professor, and it was super scary because I still had this thing in my head where I'm like, well, I'm not really good enough to succeed at this thing that everyone tells you is impossible to succeed at. But I still definitely didn't think design was an option, especially when I got into those design classes that you have to take as an illustration major and they're telling me how bad I am at it. It was a process to get to the point where I'm like, hey, maybe I can do something visual and maybe this is the thing I'm going to find success at.
And then fast forward to now, you know, seeing designers have, like, the industry is much more wide open. The possibility is much more in front of us. What are your thoughts on the accessibility now that younger creatives have on the access to actually make careers out of the things that were once only considered hobbies for, you know, the people on the pod?
Yeah, I think like it's amazing. And I don't know if young people are aware of how many opportunities there are, but it's just, I mean, just from the sports industry perspective alone, like from when I started 10 years ago to now, how many more graphic designers we have, how many more designs are needed on a daily basis versus like when I started, it was like still a lot of print and a lot of like limited, it was fairly limited what we were doing. And I assume other industries have experienced a similar thing with the explosion of social media. And like, there's just so much more content. Like when I was thinking about what to go into, you know, you could go work for a graphic design firm and maybe you're like designing one cereal box for 6 months or something. I don't really know, but yeah, it's amazing how much more content is being made and how much we still need really good content, because I think a lot of the people in charge don't sometimes know the difference between good and bad content. And maybe it doesn't matter, but I want it to. And so I think the more we can make good content, the more it will matter if the content's good.
So you're not a quantity over quality?
No, I probably should be. And there are times you just have to get out 20 graphics and it's not going to be in your portfolio. But I mean, what I love more than anything, just personality wise, is just sit and noodle at something for 8 hours and really make it something beautiful, which maybe isn't an ideal fit for this industry. But I've been really lucky in like kind of what my position has become and how BYU values their visual identity, that we have plenty of people. And every once in a while, I do get that time to really like get into the meat of a project and make something beautiful, because I do think there is value in that. In a world where we're just putting out endless content, I still think there's a place for just really beautiful, thoughtful design.
Can we dive into your current role and overseeing graphic designers and maybe hear a little bit about how you work with them? We have a lot, you know, you had mentioned a lot of graphic designers coming into the industry and how you support them and what you see from someone who's been in the industry, been at BYU for 10 years now. First, just start with your being creative director and what that role looks like at BYU for you.
Sure. We have 5 full-time graphic designers. I work mostly, we're sports-based, so each graphic designer has a sport that they're over. So while I have some leadership, I'm also primarily just working with men's basketball. BYU has definitely put some resources toward football and basketball and all of our sports really to like give them that support they need, including the Olympic sports and just everyone. It's a really unique situation where BYU's athletic department and our athletic director, they don't just care about those money-making sports. Like, we're giving resources and design help to all these sports. And so primarily I'm on men's basketball and that is where the majority of my work is going to be done. But we also have, I think we have 6 students right now who are working about 20 hours a week. And so a lot of the mentoring and training that we're doing is for those students that are helping us out, who are awesome. And they're doing so much work for us and also juggling school. And like, I think if I had to go to classes, I would just curl into a ball at the end of the day. Like, keeping track of five different things would like put me in my grave. So it's just so impressive that they can do it. And they do an amazing job for us. And it's such good training. And we have so many students that finish and graduate and leave, and they all talk about how much better training they got on the job with us than they ever did in the graphic design program, because they're doing stuff that is actually marketable and serving a purpose. And it's such good training, and it's really great to watch them learn and just kind of get that practical experience that is just so valuable that you can't really get in a classroom.
In your role, what do you look for when you're interviewing those student candidates, or even, you know, hiring for full-time roles? Like, what are the, not necessarily the tangible skills that they have, but some of the soft skills that you might look for in?
Definitely like enthusiasm for what we're going to be doing on a daily basis. We've hired people, like students especially, that have just spectacular portfolios, and we ask them if they've been to a football game, and they're like, no, like I'm not really into sports. And those are the hires that are usually not successes.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've learned as we've gone, like, even if the portfolio is not super special, if they are going to love what they're doing, that effort is and enthusiasm is going to make up the difference. And then obviously just people skills. As graphic designers, we like to kind of, me especially, kind of do the little hermit thing and just put on our noise canceling headphones and work. And I live for that. But you have to be able to collaborate with people, get along with people. You have to be easy to work with, because that's going to make a difference. If you're not, even if you're just like, you're not creating this stuff alone, you have to be able to collaborate with a team and coaches and so many people that, you know, are in stressful situations or have stressful jobs. A lot of times people aren't at their best. You have to learn to like kind of just be good at the people part of things, even if it feels like graphic design isn't, that's not a big part of it. It definitely is.
Kind of in that vein with students, I'm sure a lot of this is their first time actually getting feedback on their work and critical feedback. How do you address giving feedback to those students and structuring it in a way, maybe knowing that it might be their first time getting real critical feedback on their work?
Sure. I mean, it's always tricky. I mean, I don't think you ever get to a point where you wouldn't rather hear a compliment than like someone being like, ooh, that wasn't a great choice. But you do, it does get easier. And I think it just, and there are ways you can give feedback, you know, start with a compliment, all the things that, you know, you can try. And I mean, the students that we hire are so awesome and they want to get better, and they're really eager to hear how to do that. So yeah, it's just, if someone's having a hard time with that feedback, it really is. And once they see the result and they see themselves getting better, I think that also makes it easier, as you realize like, oh, this feels good to improve. And like, I think somewhere along that process, you start to accept the critique a little bit more. And I mean, most of our students are so awesome. They're just seeking that out anyway. They're like, tell me why this is terrible. And so they're just great. But yeah, feedback is always, it always stings a little when someone doesn't love it. That's for sure.
What's the worst feedback you've ever gotten from other people?
Oh my gosh, people are so mean on social media. I mean, there's always someone saying fire the graphic designer, right?
Oh, always. Yeah. The trolls. They come out.
Yeah. Sports fans, man, they're, you don't know this, but they're just very, very, they're very good graphic designers, apparently.
Everyone's a graphic designer when they're rooting for the team. Yeah.
So I don't know. Those things, I mean, some days that feels worse than others. I think probably the one that stuck with me the most was my typography professor that told me it's a good thing I wasn't going into graphic design because I was never going to figure it out. And so that,
Shout out to that person, because look where you are.
It's just hilarious because he's just some like wildly average adjunct professor. But, like, It lived in my head. Like, professors, they've got to know, like, they have some staying power. And when they use words like never or it's hard to get rid of that in your head. So that probably is the one with the most staying power.
Most staying power, but also most motivating power, I think, for me, you know, looking back, I'm like, oh, really? I can't.
I wish I had more of that in my personality, like that, like contrary. I'm really like, I almost apologize to him. Like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so bad at this. Like, I need to develop a little more of like the feistiness, I think.
No, I mean, I think that's it's a common thing that a lot of women have is, you know, you said it, and I'm catching myself actually doing it quite a bit where I say, I'm sorry. Like, I didn't even bump into somebody and then I barely grazed somebody and I'm apologizing, right? I think that's it's kind of something that's just been ingrained in us as women, I think. How do you stay unapologetic about your work? And I know you mentioned it's not quite supernatural for you, but I'm curious, like, do you try to hone that skill? Do you try to, at this phase in your career, kind of like own your abilities and who you are?
I don't know. I mean, I think my personality is probably pretty solidified at this point. Like,
right.
I am who I am. I mean, I try to like not let stuff get to me. But at the same time, there's a good side to that. There's flexibility. There's like, oh, maybe that person is right.
Mm-hmm.
I get really mean feedback online or whatever. And the initial reaction is, oh, that hurts. And the next reaction, if I'm doing my job, is do they have a point?
Mm.
And so it's to come at things and always be like, hey, I'm going to show you. Like, I don't know that that's super productive always. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of wisdom in knowing when that side needs to come out and then when you need to be maybe a little bit more humble and teachable. And I usually err on the humble teachable side and like just being sad deep down or something. But I think there's a time and place for both, I guess. And I just think it's figuring out that balance is a lifelong goal, I guess.
Yeah, I love that. It's like almost like a teeter-totter of the objective side and the objective view of it, where you say, okay, maybe they do have a point, but it's also a career that is very subjective and, you know, catered to your own personal taste. I'm curious, we've talked a lot about the work and, you know, some of your inspiration outside, but what do you like to do for fun? You mentioned hiking. What do you do in your spare time when you're away from the office, away from the designs?
I'm just with my family. We're doing a lot of stuff together. Utah has just a ton of outdoor activities. I don't know if you guys have been here, but there's like the mountains and the forest. And then we have the like Red Rock down south. So we're camping and hiking and just outdoors a lot when it's not winter. It's like snowing currently, but it's coming soon. We're going to be able to get back out. And I do a lot of cooking and I do reading. It's just, yeah, kind of quiet stuff. I'm a bit of an introvert, so I'm not out clubbing ever. but yeah, just a lot of outdoors, a lot of just getting outside, getting out from the computer.
Definitely resting the eyes. I feel like that's necessary for those of us behind the screen and monitors.
Yeah, for sure.
So it is Women's History Month, and there's a lot to be said about everything that's going on outside. Do you ever take the time to like sit back and say, as a woman, like, I'm really doing this in a leadership role, or do you just kind of walk through it and say, hey, I'm this position, and don't really put the emphasis on that? I mean, you're part of history as well, right?
Well, thank you. I'm not sure how consciously I sit there and think I'm doing this as a woman, or feel extra pressure because I need to show other women. I do think the majority of my focus is do good work, and hopefully that will do the work for me. And you know, maybe there's a bit of a feeling like I need to work harder or be better, but I feel like I've been pretty lucky in my career that I don't feel like I've had to fight against that much. But I do feel like for anyone, make the work great, and it tends to work itself out if you're in a good place. But yeah, I don't know that I've sat down and really focused on my role as a woman a lot. Just too busy doing the work, I guess.
I love it. And for those young ladies and women that are up and coming, whether that's high school, in college, early in the career, what advice would you lend to them of navigating through this this industry? Because it can be, you know, pretty gruesome. It can be tiresome. It can be a lot of things heavy. What advice would you give to the younger and up and coming women designers?
I mean, I think I would go back to, it's really easy to feel like a bit of an imposter, especially as a woman, just because there's not a ton of us. It feels like kind of a new space for us. But just lean into those things again that make you different, because those are the things that are going to actually be strengths. How I always felt like, you know, because sports wasn't my background, or like I have more of an artistic feel to my work, I feel like the things that I thought were going to be make this career harder for me are actually the things that have made me succeed. And so I think if you're a female going into this industry, anything that's making you feel like maybe I'm not going to be good at this or fit at this, or it's not going to work out, like lean into those things exactly, because that's the stuff that's going to take you further than trying to pretend to be some other dude, you know? Yeah, let it make you unique, because that'll help you stand out.
Let me just say, you have so many like sound bites that I'm like, you know, my video editor background is like, yes, 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 yes. And as I'm listening to you and thinking about myself when I was in college, you know, I didn't have a video production background, but I learned it in that space. I wish I could have listened to this podcast then. So I just want to say the things that you're saying and sharing are so inspiring and insightful. And even for somebody like myself, who's like, midway, I guess, through my career, if that's even a thing. Thank you for sharing so candidly. It's really beautiful.
Thank you.
What advice do you wish that you would have gotten as a younger creative? And what's the best advice that you get?
Oh, gosh. I always have a hard time with the best advice questions, because like there's so much and it all builds on each other. The advice I wish I had gotten. Well, I think we've touched on like the more ambiguous, like life kind of advice, maybe specifically like design advice. I wish someone had like told me, and this is something that I've been thinking about a lot lately, just specifically in design, is make sure you know what problem you're trying to solve. Because mm-hmm. so much starting out, and maybe this is deeper than that and it's about life, but like just with design, when you're starting out and don't really know what you're doing, and you're just throwing stuff at as a design and trying to figure out how to make it work, sometimes you'll get lucky and it'll fix something. But most times, if you're doing that and just throwing stuff at a design, you keep working at it, you keep working on it. The main problem is you don't know what you're trying to solve. You don't know what the problem is. So take a step back and look and see what that problem is that's happening, and then fix that instead of just like trying 1,000 different things, because it's not going to work if you don't know what the problem is. So from a design standpoint, I wish someone had explained that to me, because I spent a lot of time on designs just trying random stuff and just getting more and more frustrated and feeling like I'm really bad at this, when I just didn't know what the problem was I was trying to solve. And that it still comes up in my work. If I'm getting frustrated about something, I'm like, take a step back. What is actually bothering you? And once I figure that out, then I can solve it. So I think that's a little bit of advice I wish I had had. And maybe that's the same advice I'd give to young designer. I don't know.
On that same note, I'm just thinking at this point in your career, do you ever give yourself your own constraints around a project? Like, oh, I'm going to try to use this one particular feature in whatever you're making, or I'm going to try to implement this one element. Do you do that at all at this point? Because I know each project has their own creative constraints and limitations, but do you also give yourself your own to help yourself and your learning at this stage?
Sometimes I'll, and not really constraint, but sometimes I'll be like, hey, I'm really sick of using United in my work. Like, what if I pick this off the wall, like wedding font, and like see if I can make it work in a sports setting? And so it's not as much of a constraint, but I'm like, hey, what if I did something totally different? A lot of my stuff will start that way. Because again, like, there's so many people doing the same things in sports design, it's pretty easy to stand out. And so like, as something as little as a font choice, or you see, like, sometimes some designers will be like, what if I do something floral in sports design, or bring a feminine element? Those sorts of things are genius, and they stand out because people don't see them that much. So sometimes I'll start out a project with like, hey, could I make this work with a football player? And just to see if I can. A lot of times it doesn't work. That's where my folder of like failed experiments comes in, and it's full of stuff that I shouldn't have ever tried. But that's fine. It's fine to have something that doesn't work, because you tried it out, and like, it'll make its way into your work sometime. We have a lot of built-in restraints. And I like to say that constraints equal creativity. Like, as soon as you're limited in some fashion, your brain is forced to be more creative. A couple of years ago, they came to us and said, hey, you have to use more than one athlete in all your stuff. Anything you're doing, especially as a sponsor, or you have to use more than one athlete. For me, that was like, I can't do that. Like, because I really like the simplicity of like one single figure, bold typography. So I complained a lot. But man, going through the process of trying to find a creative way to put more than one athlete in a composition together, and finding a good way to do that that like was unique and felt natural and smart and like planned, that I grew an insane amount from that. And it's something I still complain about, but I learned to do things that I never would have tried to do otherwise. So those kind of constraints, if no one's giving them to you, it can be helpful to just give them to yourself.
I love that thought process and feedback of like the things that can be frustrating to us can also be helpful in pushing us forward. How do you, in working with a group, you obviously each have your own strengths. So having five other graphic designers that you work with, and you're splitting up different sports, is how do you keep everything looking cohesive in a way? Or do you keep everything looking cohesive? And how do you think about that process of working with other designers in your group and the global brand with maybe each sport's different look?
Yeah, it's tricky. And I feel like everyone has kind of a different philosophy about this and how much room is there for variety. For me, I feel like there's more room for variety than we act like there is within your brand. Again, we're putting out so much content. There is a real visual fatigue that comes if every single thing your athletic department is putting out looks basically the same. It's people stop noticing it. It's people don't see it anymore because there's so much of it going out. So I think it just really depends on what you're looking for. We definitely have a strong brand. We have strong brand guidelines. We have the colors, and we have the logos, and we have certain visual philosophy that guides us. There's I don't know the exact words, but there are things other schools do that BYU is not going to do. We're going to be classy. We're going to be clean. We're going to be we're not going to be edgy necessarily. And so you lean into that, and there's still so much room for some variety. And I feel like that's a strength as long as you're really clear on who your audience is. I tell a story sometimes about a poster I was designing that, and I kind of tend to push the edge of things a little bit because I'm experimenting a lot. But I was designing a poster, and I really liked how it turned out. It was like this really kind of vintagey looking, like retro thing, and the whole team was on it, and like I really liked it. And one of our guys from our sponsorship team came over, and he's like, "Oh, cool! It looks like a Ouija board." And I was like, "Okay, I don't know if you know much about BYU, but that is not different." So I was like, thank you for that feedback. I definitely need to start over. But it was really valuable. It was a really valuable moment for me to be like, okay, there's a line. Like, yeah, I can push things, but it's not about me. It's about the audience. And it's not about me. It's about the brand. And if it becomes about me, then I'm not doing my job as a graphic designer. And so I think there's something in there that can help guide, like, keeping things cohesive and in the same, like, ballpark, basically. But I do think, because of the amount of content we put out, there may be a little bit more room for variety than maybe there was in the 80s when you're looking at, like, putting out, you know, again, like one cereal box a year or something, where, yeah, they're not going to get visual fatigue from, like, looking the exact same as everything else your company is putting out. But when you're putting out 20 posts a day from your athletic department or whatever it is, there might be a little more room for some variety. But yeah, everyone, it's a balancing act for sure.
Do you have a favorite project or top three designs or projects that you've ever worked on? And they don't necessarily need to be favorites in the regard of, like, oh, it was your best work. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was something that, right, really challenged you and you were able to execute on it. Do you have any top three projects that you can share?
Gosh, I mean, I don't know. I think, honestly, we're going through so much volume. I barely remember a lot of the stuff I do. I'll go through, like, the feed for one of our sports, or like my gondola page or whatever, when I remember to update it. And I'm like, oh, I forgot all about this or that. And so it's hard to think of, like, favorites. I think anytime I, like, challenge myself to do something different, I think those are times when, like, I've grown a lot. Those are some favorites. Like, whenever I try and venture into motion, which is hard for me, and, like, I can do that successfully, like, I feel like those are moments where I'm like, okay, you've grown here and you did something that you're not completely embarrassed by. So I think those sorts of things are probably the things that I'm most proud of.
As the lead designer, what are some things that are necessary when, you know, a lot of schools do things and don't really have a brand guide the same as businesses? What are some of the top things you think are very necessary to include in a visual identity brand guide?
It depends on who it's going out to. If it's internal for, like, our design team, I think you can include a lot more things, and a lot more chance for interpretation. If it's designers that you trust, you can give them a lot more leeway. The brand guide can be a lot more flexible. I think if it's going out to a coach or, you know, non-visual people, either in your department or externally, I think it needs to be a lot more rigid. Those ones we send out to, like, external people or non-visual people, it's like, here's your four fonts. Here's the two colors you get to use. Here are the two logos you have the option of. You have to, like, rein that in a lot when you don't trust the visual knowledge of the person that's working on it, or they don't have a vested interest in your brand. If it's an external person, it's always going to be really, really dialed in and tight. And so there's going to be some really inflexible information included in a brand guide for things that go to those people. Whereas internally, like, we have different sort of guidelines that allow for us to, like, use our visual knowledge and, like, make some more creative stuff, if that makes sense.
Makes a lot of sense. I love that approach. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough, is that we as creatives understand our processes and decision making and all of the fine-tuned details and decisions that we make, but maybe somebody who doesn't have that background or that expertise doesn't fully understand. So I love how you, you know, kind of say, mentioned how you keep things a lot more buttoned up for the folks that, you know, have the non-visual backgrounds, like you mentioned.
That's for sure.
Great intel there. I have one thing. We haven't done it in a minute.
Yeah, but you're past your time.
We were playing a little bit of a game with some previous guests to within 30 seconds.
Oh, I'm nervous. What is this?
It's a fun game. No pressure. This is
all
a fun
pressure.
Space. No, Darius. We're keeping it light here. 30 seconds to list all of your, you know, design creative work essentials. It can be anything from a physical product like a notebook, a pen, a pencil, your phone, the tools you're using, the spaces you're in, as many of the things and objects and products and tools that help you in your day-to-day work. So okay, we'll give you a timer. We'll start it now. You've got 30 seconds in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay. Diet Coke, ice water, just starting off strong with like food and drink. These little like graph pads. I think they're, I don't remember the name of them, but I love these little spiral bound graph pads for sketching. My Wacom tablet, I'm always using that. What else? My big playlist of like 800 songs that I never make a dedicated playlist. It's always just that on shuffle.
And time. I love it. Okay.
Yeah. That might be it. I mean, the Adobe programs. Our photographers are amazing, and I can't do anything without good photography. So that's fantastic. I don't know. Am I saying like, what are other people saying? Someone needs to give me a hint.
No, these are all great. It's different every time, which is like the fun part about it. You know, some people say my dog, or, you know, I have my candle that I have going all the time. I love the drinks at the top, because I joke that like folks listening in can't see, but I've got my emotional support drinks. I've got water and coffee.
You need variety, because, you know, you'd want something different every time. But yeah, you got to stay hydrated, right?
All day. No, that's awesome. And I love that you have like a notebook. I'm definitely a note taker too. And I feel like there's something about it being tangible, yeah, and not doing something on a screen. I'm definitely on the notepad.
My list have to be actually written down, or I don't pay attention to them.
That I love it.
For sure. Shauna, thank you for spending some time with us for
of course
this great episode. It's great to get to know you and your background, and know that you're not alone in this space. We're all creatives and in this thing together.
Thanks so much, you guys. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. Special thanks to APM for providing the music used in the podcast today. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're not a member and would like to join, go to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.